Patrick Curry, reel three.
No illusions about that.
How did you know that at the end, you know, that the Republic was going to lose at that point?
Well, politically, you could sort of see the line-up of forces, the British government sort of pushing the French government into certain actions. And then the Chamberlain government obviously doing a deal with Germany, you know, to create a front against the Soviet Union. And that on no account would the Republic be allowed to win. And then non-intervention, which obviously intervention on the other side, you know, the forces were stacked against us.
You felt that in Spain?
Mm.
How did you find this out? I mean, what were your sources of information?
Well, just the general development of the struggle.
But, I mean, you were aware of it?
We were gradually coming back and back and back, and you could see the forces of Germany and Italy.
Did you have
the fact that the Soviet Union hadn't the same access, you know, couldn't put in the supplies to Spain, that Germany and Italy particularly, because, you know, so near, could put in. And then, of course, there are no more reinforcements are drying up. And ours was purely a voluntary, it really was a voluntary body, which had to be kept by the party. Well, there was a limit to what the party could do, you know, in terms of finance to finance the thing.
Yeah.
No doubt in my mind.
Did you read many newspapers while you were in Spain?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Which
well, Daily Worker, of course.
That came out regularly?
Oh, yes, we got Daily Worker quite regularly, yes. And then we got the News Chronicle, Reynolds News, Papers of the Left, and others we got, of course.
Did you ever read any of the Spanish papers?
With difficulty, yes. I wouldn't say I could get, you know, read them. Well, the Spanish were improving by then, but I could get the gist of it. And then we used to have discussion groups, of course, and it makes you feel available, I think.
You say at that time, this is March 38, before you came out, that you personally could see that the struggle was over.
Oh, yeah.
What were people like Rust and Pollitt saying? I mean, the people were still fighting, they would carry on fighting
for
6 months. What were they saying? What did they say?
Well, I think from a party point of view, you know, it was realised that it was coming to an end. Don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, you know, the party line was we fight on until the end. Actually.
Did they say as much?
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm.
But presumably they wouldn't say that to the people fighting.
Oh, no.
Which accounts for their beliefs.
But if you had any sort of political knowledge at all, you know, you could see the general development of it. Just the same as you could see that this, you know, this would end. And then and the next war would start very, very soon after that, because obviously once the idea was of helping in Spain was to get access to Gibraltar, of course, to close it from Germany's point of view. Well, they didn't, but obviously that was the objective. And to put a second front on the other side of France.
Okay, so you're back in England. Just one question finally on Spain itself. There was an anarchist PULM rising, wasn't there? CNT and the PULM, rising the PULM in Barcelona in May of 1937. How did you react to that? You presumably heard about it.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
What was the general impression of that?
Well, the general impression was that the ILP and the Trotskyists came to Barcelona, not much further than Barcelona, and just as they do today, they were raising slogans of a socialist revolution, which should take place now, which, of course, was against the party line, because the party line was, of course, to win the war first, before we talk about social revolutions. And this was sort of taking people away from the main struggle, you know, you'd lose a lot of allies because there were the population was a complex population, you know, Catalonians, who had a very different idea from the rest of Spain of what they were fighting for. They were fighting very definitely for independence for Catalonia. I don't have any doubt about that. And to talk about socialist revolution, you know, with people like this, it was you just push them over to the Franco side. So, you know, we took it very seriously that had to be put down.
And what about the, there was a lot of controversy about the arrest of Andrés Nin, the boom leader, and who was then either shot or disappeared. How was that reported, and what was your reaction to it?
Well, I'd have been in agreement with it, you know, that would be, I mean, anything that deviated or took anything away from the front, as far as I was concerned, it would be a criminal act, you know, and they did. I mean, they uncovered quite a large arsenal of small arms, which were badly needed. I think they even found a tank somewhere. You know what they got?
Yeah. The notion that the war should be won first, then the revolution, was, as it were, aligned with the notion of the Popular Front as an alliance of democratic forces against fascism. Did that strike you at the time simply as a tactical thing or a very deeply philosophical one, that the party had shifted more to a democratic line? And if you compare the slogans of the early days of the early Bolsheviks, it was very much on a revolutionary line.
Yes.
But by 1936, some 16 years later, it had changed to this democratic line. Did it strike you as simply a tactical one, that, you know, we'll have a temporary alliance, or did it strike you as a fundamental
thing? Oh, no, fundamental change. I think it followed from the Comintern, you know, in 1933. The lie was then was quite a deep shift. We weren't for revolution or for socialist revolution or anything like that. We were for a very broad anti-fascist front, because it was obvious that it was a formation of imperialist powers coming together to put the Soviet Union down, first of all, and then to divide the world up amongst themselves, you know, the classic case. And for me, it wasn't a tactic. It was a deep change that we should drop this question of socialist revolution entirely. You know, and the only line was to build up this broad anti-fascist front, allied with anybody who would fight fascism.
What do you think were the positive aspects? Certainly, was anti-fascist. But what do you think were the positive notions in the Popular Front policy? You say against a social revolution.
Yes.
Presumably the line had also changed from the notion of a dictatorship of the proletariat.
Yeah.
What were the positive aspects? What were they saying we must have?
I'm not quite sure that I get you. The positive aspect was this question of dropping, how can I say it? A sort of a revolutionary cry to change society into preserving what we have and trying, first of all, to divide the imperialist powers by allying ourselves with either one or the other. Didn't really matter which, because one imperialist power was as good or bad as another imperialist power. Rarely it was for the preservation of the Soviet Union, because we saw the Soviet Union as a base for further advance. And so we saw that the first and most important thing was the preservation of the Soviet Union, defence of the Soviet Union.
Do you think that with hindsight, that maybe a lot of European parties were in some ways subordinated to the Soviet Union's interests?
Oh, yes. There's any doubt about that.
Do you think that was good or bad?
No, I think it was good.
I think
at the time it was correct, because the Soviet Union was a base for further advance of socialism. And sort of looking back over the years, you can see that without the Soviet Union, there wouldn't have been the advance that we have made. You know, there couldn't have been an Angola. Vietnam would have gone under. Even the Arabs wouldn't have been able to put out their oil prices without the Americans just marching and doing what they like. So the defence of the Soviet Union, I think, was correct. I still think today it was correct.
Didn't you have the impression that sometimes that the Soviet Union could possibly have stressed more socialism rather than the Soviet Union. I mean, for example, I know that people like Pollitt, for example, were very much disappointed by the Soviet-Nazi pact in late summer of 39, weren't they? And Pollitt, in fact, he left the executive, in fact, didn't he? What was your reaction, your personal reaction to that?
Well, it was opposite. In fact, in Lancashire, we were right. Bill Rust, our line was that we should support this. Because, as I say, as far as we were concerned, one imperialist power was about another. And the thing that had to be prevented at all costs was a ganging up of all imperialist powers against the Soviet Union. So it didn't really matter how the division took place, as long as there was a division. I mean, whether the Soviet Union fought on the side of the British and Americans against the Germans, or vice versa, the fact is, at the end of the war, the Soviet Union would have come out on top. And as I saw it, we would support any move that would preserve the Soviet Union.
So were the Lancashire people against the Second World War when it started up?
Oh, yes.
You were against it?
Oh, yes.
In spite of the fact that, you know, a year earlier you've been fighting specifically as anti-fascist?
Anti-fascist. Because it wasn't an anti-fascist war. It was an imperialist war.
Well, then,
because, I mean, obviously there were negotiations going on, and the fact that, of course, we found out after that Hess had come over to negotiate that Britain and Germany should go in and then cover up the empire.
Now, then when the Soviet Union joined the war, rather when Germany invaded
it... then it was, once more, the defence of the Soviet Union. We were defending the base of socialism.
Now, supposing the Soviet Union had never come into the war... what would your line have been then?
It would still have been an imperialist war. We shouldn't have supported it. Any more than the First World War was an imperialist war, and under no circumstances could you support it. It was simply for the division of markets. You know, that sort of war you couldn't support.
Had it come to the stage of a Nazi invasion of this country?
Oh yes, that would be a defence of your own country in that sense. Oh yes.
But in fact, there were some splits in the French people who faced precisely that problem.
That problem.
And Mackey didn't really get going, did he?
And no, not until after. It's very tricky, you know. It's a thin dividing line where you defend your own country or participate in the imperialist war. It's a dicey one, isn't it?
Since that time, though, since the 40s, and especially after events in Russia, up to 53, and then especially afterwards, the line of most European Communist parties seems to have changed somewhat, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
And are you in agreement with
that? Oh, yes, thoroughly, yes.
For what basic reason do you agree with that change?
Well, first of all, so we don't have the policy of the Communist Party, obviously, has changed and needed to change. It's no longer necessary for us to defend the Soviet Union. It's quite capable of defending itself. And I think we've grown up and we are able now to mind our own business, establish our own way of how we will, in our respective countries, arrive at socialism without let or hindrance by anybody else.
So do you feel now that, for example, that it's quite possible for the British Communist Party, or more specifically nowadays, the Italians, say,
Italian,
or Spanish, to go, in fact, their own way, even to disagree with Moscow?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
So, in fact, that rather, for many people, heart-searching time at the end of the summer 39, that probably wouldn't occur again. When they were divided
I don't think they're divided. I think that the Soviet Union is in a sense lagging. You know, it's it's difficult to put it. And they're lagging behind the development. I think, you know, they're of course the conditions in Soviet Union are totally different to the conditions in the capitalist countries. Soviet Union are developing towards communist society. The capitalist countries, communist parties, have yet to get into a period of socialism, you know. And so there must be a divergence of opinion as to how we're going to get there, because the classic case of the Soviet Union, you know, revolution through war, doesn't prevail today. And so, of course, the conditions are totally different. And inevitably, I suppose, there must be this divergence of opinion between the Soviet Union and Western European, and again with African countries, you know, which is a different stage of development again.
Just two further points. Presumably you saw Czechoslovakia in late summer of 1938. You saw that as a turning point in the war. How did you react to two subsequent events, three subsequent events, 53, 56, and 68, Germany, Hungary, and Czechoslovakia? How do you react to this? First of all, Hungary, which was the most important one. There was a lot of disagreement, wasn't there, about that time?
No, in that case, I supported the Soviet Union. First of all, because I didn't know much, like most people, of actually what was going on there. And I suppose it's a case of when in doubt, you support the Soviet Union. And I think, given my time over again, I would most probably do the same thing, I think. At that time, in 56. Yeah. Today I wouldn't. You know, if they did it again today, no, I'd say no, I think it'd be wrong. I think at the time it was sort of doubtful, it could have been counter-revolution, could not, but I think in the case of doubt, you know, play safe and go in.
Now, 12 years later, an almost similar sort of thing took place. The circumstances were slightly different. There was Czechoslovakia.
Yes.
Now, 12 years later, how do you think that? That's 6 years ago.
Yes.
8 years ago.
There I was doubtful. Very doubtful. Very doubtful. Czechoslovakia is a difficult one because, as Bismarck said, Czechoslovakia points two ways, the heart of Europe and the heart of Russia. Yeah. And while I still agree that the Soviet Union was right to go in, it was only because of the sort of geographical position of Czechoslovakia. You know, it was sort of strategically absolutely vital for the socialist camp that Czechoslovakia should remain in it. You know, and any doubt that it might go out, you know, out of, I'd say keep it in.
Did you think that Dubček was going the wrong way? Or his party, you know, his
I thought it was inclined to be sort of sort of deviationist, how can I put it?
He's going too far, too fast?
Too fast, yes.
I think if he'd taken that slowly,
it'd have been all right. I think it was doing, you know, too much too fast. It's very much in the Soviet Union. I mean, the Soviet Union can only sort of lift this sort of rather strict discipline that exists in the Soviet Union, without any doubt, possibly justifiably. But it's going to be a little difficult to give the same sort of liberty in the Soviet Union as we ourselves here have, because in the first place they never had it. There's no question of liberty, of freedom of speech in the Tsarist days, for the average person. Whereas in the Western countries, particularly in Britain, you know, we've had to fight for our freedom over a very long period, and we value it perhaps far more than they do. You know, we got the sense of freedom and freedom of speech, you know, the right to stand up and say what you like, you know. And I suppose it's far more valued in a place like Britain than it would be in a country like Russia.
How do you react to people like Solzhenitsyn, who stand up and demand for it, their freedom of speech? Do you think they're out of tune with their own country?
I do, because I've never heard of a... I never heard of a... What can you call it? A dissident hod carrier, or a dissident miner. It's always a dissident intellectual. I suppose it's... It's what one expects. After all, an intellectual is a person who can think and is always more in advance of his time than the coal miner or the hod carrier.
Would you see the Soviet Union slowly evolving into a more liberal society?
Yes.
And presumably that's
yes.
the hopes of most British countries.
Yeah. I think it's been a little slow, and they're going to... You know, it's a vast country, vast resources, and... You know, they'll have to go through a lot of thinking how they can sort of best go about it. But I think given a little patience, you know, I don't have any doubt that they will.
So if Britain were nowadays a completely socialist society with all the traditional liberties we've got,
yes,
and you for one would not stand for 1 minute with the Soviet Union coming in and imposing.
Oh no. Its own
Because of the different traditions. And so
yeah. Yes. That's why it has to be the British way. There's no other way of doing it. You couldn't impose. You know, you couldn't do it.
And that's an evolution, isn't it, from even the Popular Front?
Oh yes. Yes. Definitely.
One final thing, I think, just back to the Civil War and tying that in with the Soviet Union. We were just talking about that previously, that and quite a number of the Russians who fought in Spain, who advised in Spain,
yeah,
they met a rather sticky end when they got back to Russia, didn't they? Quite a number were, you know, like the generals, for example, were either imprisoned or put on trial, or in some cases they were shot.
Sure.
When did you find out that? When was it generally known that that had happened?
Well, I didn't know it happened, to be quite honest. But
what's your reaction to it now that you know that?
Well, of course, at that time, you know, there were purges. How can I say it? Knowing the attitude of, for instance, the CIA, you know, and the similar organisations that existed at the time, I would imagine, given the background of the Soviet Union, or Russia, there must have been a lot of elements who weren't certainly not inclined to communism or socialism. And it was always a fear, I suppose, arising out of the reality of knowing that there would be eventually, you know, the confrontation between the socialist country and the bloc. And I suppose it was a sort of a constant fear, particularly in the army, of the officer class, you know, could they would be the only ones capable of making a coup of any sort, you know. And I suppose it was an overreaction to that sort of situation ever arising. Mm-hmm. That's why they were dealt with so badly, really.
Yeah. And you thought it was bad?
I thought it was bad, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and the conditions, the equipment they had and the conditions we were under, I don't think you could have done much better, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Finally, really is finally, you've been back to Spain,
yeah,
and you've been in Spain 5 years.
Yeah.
That's rather different from a lot of your colleagues who, in fact, have refused to go back to Spain.
Well, I married a Spanish woman.
Yeah.
And she lived in Malaga. Mm. And,
You're
that's why I went back.
How different do you find Spain now?
Oh. Well, I went back to Madrigal a couple of years ago. Yeah. That's exactly the same as it was when I left it.
Really?
Absolutely. In fact, if I had known Madrigal, I'd never found it, because the map I had, Madrigal wasn't on it. It's a fairly modern map. Madrigal wasn't marked on it.
No.
But it was exactly as I've, you know. Mm. As soon as I went in, I was quite familiar with it.
What about the larger cities?
Totally different. Yes. Although, you know, I've seen it develop, because I first went over to Spain about 12 years ago, you know, when things were starting to develop and all the building was starting. But,
and when was your last visit? Most recent
visit? 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Mm. What was the one? Which cities did you visit?
Well, most, I think. We did a sort of tour, you know, Spain and Morocco. Madrid, Segovia, Seville, Cordoba, Granada, Malaga,
Albacete. What do you think of the cities now, the Spanish cities?
Pretty horrible.
But I mean the standard of life.
Standard of life, of course, is comparable with ours. I'm going to tell about that.
And the Spanish people themselves?
Well, there's still a feeling, a very strong feeling. You know, wife's family, the brother-in-law, although we never told him that I was in the International Brigade, he was on the opposite side, you know, Franco side, simply because he would happen to be in the down there at the time, for no other reason. But of course his sons who work in Bilbao are very pro. You know, we had very good discussions. They knew.
They're very pro.
Pro working class, you know, class, working class, yeah, and yeah, socialist, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
So there is a quite a division. And then, of course, Patigeri family lost somebody in the Civil War, so it's, you know, it's still, they feel it very, very strongly.
Yeah.
Rather like the Irish and the English.
Yeah. Don't you find though in Spain that for most Spaniards, it's so long ago, and so much of that generation was killed.
Oh, yeah.
Very
yes.
few people have much awareness of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Just very, very briefly, absolutely fine. Though. Did you take part in the Second World War at all?
Oh yes.
You
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
When did you join up? Or when were you called up?
Well, when did you join up? You know, straight away. But they wouldn't have me then because I was in scheduled occupation. You know, I was working Metro Vicks at the time then, and I got called up in 43.
43.
Mm-hmm.
So that solved one problem for you.
What was that?
Well, the fact that that in the early stages it was an imperialist war.
Oh yes, yes, yes. Well, I didn't volunteer then. You know, as when the Soviet Union came in, of course, went straight up, but getting back in. Then eventually got in 43.
You went in what earlier for a brief period?
No, I couldn't. I wouldn't. They wouldn't have me then.
Because of your occupation.
Yes. Yeah.
And you went up in
43.
Into what?
Rimi.
Carrying on your training. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
And you were in there until when?
47.
Mm. So you stayed on after the war sometimes.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you see any fighting at all?
Very little. Very little. Well, we went out, we were supposed to go to Germany, and we got drawn back from there, and then we went out to the Far East for the Burma campaign, you know, got all ready for that, and we got on the ships, we were set to sail, and then they dropped the bomb, because we didn't know what it was then.
Yeah.
And so we sort of hung about, didn't know what to do, really. In fact, I saw more action in Liverpool docks than I did in the army. Much more.
Yeah.
Much more dangerous.
Is there any final thing that you think we've missed on you know, your war in Spain and the Civil War? Any incident or any impression that you carried away from it?
Not that I haven't given it, I think. No.
Okay.
Covered it.